session number 1186, reel 3.
Right, yeah, well, so I did this fast turn and I got him inside him and he didn't know how badly I was hit, so, or maybe he's running out of fuel, but he took off. By that time, because of the turning around, I was down below 500 feet, in which case you couldn't jump, the parachute wouldn't have time to open. Oh, it was very risky, so I decided there was only one thing to do, was to crash land. So I headed, it was over Kent, and there was some marshes. So I headed for a bogland, which I saw, or a marsh or something. And I put my aeroplane, force landed it in there. And because I'd undone my straps, I was thrown out of the cockpit. And I landed completely unhurt in a ditch. And I scrambled out. And I hit the belt, my parachute buckled, let my parachute drop, and it just blew away. It had been completely destroyed by a cannon shell. And I had my leg over the side of the Spitfire, about to bail out in the parachute. And if he hadn't have turned in on me again, and I hadn't turned in on him, I would have bailed out, and of course I hadn't got no silk left in my parachute. So he saved my life.
Did you have any other narrow escapes in the Battle of Britain?
Yes, I did. The situations with airplanes and replacements was pretty desperate. And believe it or not, if one was terribly badly shot up, you were told to go and land it back at the aircraft factory and pick up a new airplane. To bring it back, you know, if you said, look, this one had it, they said, can you make it to Eastleigh, you know, which is a factory, particularly, you know, people who were at Tangmere, which is right next door. So anyhow, I'd been very badly shot up, so I told the controller that my flying controls, I could only work on my manual sort of the stick, I could pull back the stick and it would work, but if I pushed it forward I couldn't, so I just wound back on the trimming tabs and then I eased it back and I said, you know, I've still got height to jump and I'm not sure I shouldn't jump. And the controller said, well, you know, if you can save the airplane, you know. I said, I know about the airplanes. We're desperately short of airplanes. So he said, do you think you can bring it in? So I said, yes, I'll try anyhow. So I said, my forward control is completely gone, but I can work it on the trimming tabs. So I trimmed it forward, and I was easing back on the stick, and I brought it in. Then I came below 500 feet, so I know I'd had it by that time. I couldn't bail out. It was too late. I brought it into Biggin Hill, and I did a perfect landing using this technique with the trimming tabs, winding the elevators forward and me easing back on the stick. And I got to the end of the runway. I did a perfect landing, got to the end. And I said, by God, screw you. I pulled back on the stick and the cables just collapsed. And there was nothing left. I had no control at all. They just snapped. The last cable had gone. But I was down. and everything else was shot away.
During the Battle of Britain, did very raw, poorly trained pilots have to be sent up to fight the enemy?
Well, I don't know. I think, frankly, towards the end, you know, we got inexperienced pilots, and I remember they'd come in the morning and give them a parachute, and bless their hearts, you know, didn't even get their names hardly. They were gone in the evening. But I honestly don't know what was the extent of their training, but I would imagine that these youngsters were initiated in, you know, into combat slightly prematurely, if you know what I mean. For instance, they'd never probably ever done air-to-air air firing on a range. They'd probably been told to just machine gun air-to-ground, which, I mean, the first thing I ever shot at in the air, believe it or not, even in my experience, the first thing I shot at in the air was a 109. I was never trained on a drogue. I mean, subsequently, one went to these schools, you know, where you shot at drogues and learned to shoot there. The first thing I ever shot at in the air was a 109. So I'm sure those young fellows that joined us. But that was inevitable. I mean, they were competent pilots. But I don't know what more training you could get, really.
Whereabouts did most of your fighting take place in the Battle of Britain? Over which particular parts of the country?
Kent. Well, south, well, Manston, I was stationed in Manston, Kent, Biggin Hill, Southampton, all the southeast of England. And, of course, the Channel. You know, between, well, I mean, Dunkirk, of course, was all over Dunkirk. You know, but it was the Channel ports. Channel ports, Kent, Sussex, Surrey, you know, Gatwick, all around there. Just south and southeast. And east, Manston, of course. And north, up in the, you know, the estuary there, where I shot down that Junkers 88 that had been bombing just north of the... it wasn't a Junkers 88, it was a 110. The one that I hit with the cannons that had been bombing just north of the, you know, Hornchurch. But it was all around there, just south of London. South of London's southeast coast. That was it.
When did you serve in North Africa, flying?
Operation Torch, North African landings. I flew, was it 43?
That was November 43, Torch.
Yeah, okay, well, that was it. I was commanding 111 Fighter Squadron. We came out on a huge convoy. We had our Spitfires on board with their wings strapped in packing cases. We disembarked at Gibraltar, and our airplanes were taken off and assembled at Gibraltar. And within 4 days, I flew my squadron with additional petrol tanks that they strapped to the wings. I flew my squadron from Gibraltar non-stop, obviously non-stop, to Algiers and landed at Algiers, where the battle was in progress. From Algiers, we fought protecting convoys, troop landings, our airfields, all the way up towards Tunisia. And that was probably the most horrific war, on account of the fact you flew all day and you were bombed all day and you had very little, the weather was rain, you had very little backup, and from your own ground crews used to follow you up. We used to leapfrog from one airfield to another. We used to fly off strips which the mechanics, I mean not the mechanics, the whoever built the airfields, they used to put down a strip of wire. And we used to just fly our aeroplanes in there, and we lived in trenches. We lived off K rations, Algerian wine, and we fought all day. I lost my two flight commanders, were knocked out, so I had to lead every single mission, because one of them never made it on the flight through, and the other one was blinded or went blind or something. So I just flew every mission until I practically, I'd done about 365 missions by that time, and but nobody else could lead the squadron. Not only that, but I had to take care of all my men. I was in charge of all the administration. I don't know how many men I had under my command. All their, we lived in tents, and all their welfare, their food, petrol supplies. I did the whole thing, and I led the squadron every single mission.
So and it was sheer pressure of work.
Absolutely. And we were machine gunned all the time. We were blown up. And we shot and blew them up. And, you know, we were machine gunning, you know, army support. We were. And finally, I just really, I think I just about had it in the end. And that was my third operational tour. And I'd done 365 missions.
Because at that stage of the war, with the Allies
we were
getting
winning.
On top
yeah.
of the Germans,
yeah.
That one would have thought that it would be easier than it would have been in the early days of Dunkirk
yeah, yeah.
and the Battle of Britain when
yeah.
the Germans were on top.
Yeah. Well, it was pretty desperate until finally Montgomery broke through. You know, we were holding the whole line up to, you know, up to Tunisia, and then Monty. The early days of North Africa, in you know, in our side of it, Algiers up to Tunisia, was absolutely desperate. I mean, my commanding officer had his leg blown off, and he used to hold briefings out on the tarmac in front of the little airfield that we'd taken over. I said, Charlie, you know, you're going to get in trouble. It's Charles Appleton. I said, no, we're going to have the briefings out here. You know, the bombers used to come nipping out of the clouds. So I saw one coming, and I was with Peter Hugo, who's a famous South African ace. He saw this coming, and so Pete and I jumped into a slit trench, and the bomb came down, and Appleton was holding forth. He said, where are you? The thing where he took his leg straight off. Darling, I went up to see him in the tents, you know, in the tented hospital, and he was in terrible pain, and so I arranged for an ambulance. You know, I had to do everything to pick up from Algiers to come pick him up, ambulance plane, and I went up when the plane arrived. Oh, it hadn't quite arrived. Hadn't arrived, but he was coming up, and I went up to see Charlie Appleton, Group Captain Appleton, marvellous chap, and he was really white and beat up, and his leg, they'd had to take his leg off, and I said, Charles, I've come to pick you up, you're going back to Algiers, I've got an ambulance plane coming. So I took him down to the airfield to wait for the plane, and the gun started going off. They did all the time, the airplanes, the bombs, and he said, Tony, I cannot stand this, I cannot stand any more of this, my leg. And I said look, Charlie, I'll take you away. I mean, the perimeter of the airfield was absolute, it was danger area, you know, and so I said, look, I'll take you away. So don't worry, I'll take you off the perimeter, from the perimeter. Because I knew I couldn't, because the ambulance plane would come and it wouldn't stop. So I told the ambulance driver just to drive around and come back in, and I stayed with him. He didn't know he was still sitting right on the target. The plane came in and put him aboard and shunned him off. But I mean, it was horrific. The killing was unbelievable there, the ground strafing and the bombing. But that was very rough living. I mean, you just lived in, well, you know, tents, and you ate K rations and drank Algerian wine, which you used to get from the monasteries.
How did you like it being a squadron commander?
Well, I loved it. I mean, you know, I wasn't a regular Air Force officer, and, you know, it was never going to be my career. And the only thing I ever wanted to do was to command a crack fighter squadron. And I commanded two crack fighter squadrons. And everybody knows it. And that was it. And from then on in, I had no ambition to be a wing commander, a group captain, or nothing. I just wanted to command 65 fighter squadron and 111 fighter squadron, which I did. And that was it.